And now it is my pleasure to introduce Kiki from the South College Home Group in Newark, Delaware.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hello? Okay. My name is Kiki. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for inviting me here. You invited me here, I think. So I'm speaking to you guys because I've gone through the 12 steps, and I've had an awesome experience. And as a result of doing the steps, I'm here and I'm sober today. And I'm gonna try to let God speak through me, because right now I'm kind of like shaking, which I don't really know why I'm shaking, but I am. I don't want to be in front of the podium. All right. So I'm Kiki. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say real quick, so I've been through the 12 steps. I have a sponsor, all that nonsense. It's really important that I say that, and I don't say it because it's a routine that I'm supposed to say. I say it because I have a sponsor who led me through the 12 steps. I didn't have a sponsor to show me how to get sober. I didn't have a sponsor to switch my higher power from alcohol to her. I have a sponsor because she showed me what she did, and that's all that she could do. And I get that help from everybody, every day, from the fellowship and the friends that I have made. They show me through their experience how they did this. And as a result of going through the steps, yeah, they stopped drinking, but they changed the way they perceived everything. And that's what's really helped me. And I just want to say also, like, on the way here, it's such an awesome experience that I've never had before when I was not sober, when I had not gone through these processes. We drove here, there were like six of us, and we couldn't decide to take one car or two cars. We're like, should we just all cram in one car? Because there's six people, and we all wanted to like be together because, you know, we love each other or something. So we spent about like 15 minutes trying to like figure out who was going to drive in which car. And like, I was starting to get frustrated at first, but then I was like laughing. I'm like, oh my God, like, these are my problems now. Like, my problems are now, like, how many friends can I fit into one car, and who's going to have the privilege of actually being able to drive? Like, it's just so awesome, and it's so easy for me to forget that. It's so easy for me to forget, like, all that I've gone through and what alcohol did to me. And I just want to share this story real quick because it's really prevalent in my life. And so last week I went to D.C. and I used to do a lot of work in D.C., a lot of volunteering, and I used to drink a lot there too. And for me, drinking and politics in Washington, D.C. was like the same thing. So I went back there this last week, not drinking, but I went back there to do some volunteering. And when I was leaving, you know, I saw somebody walk out of the liquor store, like, on one of the main streets. And I was like, that looks kind of interesting. Like, I wonder what that would be like, just to go home and, like, you know, go out, grab a bottle of wine and just sit there. And, like, right away, like, I knew it was delusional thinking. Like, I knew it was. But how funny that, like, my mind jumps to the part of my drinking experience where I take the first few sips, and it's like, oh, the relief. Like, that's where it jumps to. It doesn't jump to, like, the next morning where I want to kill myself, where I'm waking up in my own piss, where I'm bleeding from the face, or I've just cheated on my husband. Like, it doesn't remember any of that stuff. It remembers, oh, this feels good just to sit here and watch a movie and drink this glass of wine all classy. Like, and that's not what happens. Maybe that happened a couple times in the beginning, but that's not what happens. So I do these things, and 10 and 11 and 12 are so prominent in my life right now because if I don't do them, I go back to default, which is in my room alone, self-destructive behaviors, just all me, and I just fall apart. Like that, I say that I go to default because naturally I just go there. Like it just naturally goes there. I was there all my life, and so by not doing that, by clearing up my past and meditating and praying and helping people every day, like I found that I don't have to be there, and I forgot that moment where I was like, oh, I just want to. A glass of wine or a drink, I forgot all the work that I had to put in to get to that moment to not drink and be happy, like to feel happy. Like right now, like I can honestly say, and I'm not trying to be like cliche, oh, it changed my life, but it changed my friggin' life. Like I feel like I'm I feel like I'm a different person in a way, you know, had a spiritual experience because I perceive things differently, and perception's a huge thing for me, because the same thing's going to be happening in my body and outside in the world, but the way I'm looking at it is completely different. So nothing's changed. It's just the way that I'm looking at it that's changed, and that's really powerful and really important for me to remember. And again, like I'm not harping the steps at anybody. I'm just letting you guys know, like, this is what's worked for me, and through trial and error, like, I've found that I have to do these things every day, or I'll go back to default. So, with that, I guess I'll just share my experience and strength and hope, in this program. So, funny enough, when I first came in, you know, I didn't believe in, not that I didn't believe in God, but, like, God was not... It was about me. Like, I did it. Like, it was all about me. If I had my mindset to it, it was going to get done. Like, that just happened. And so there wasn't really any room for God. Like, I just didn't even think about it. So coming in, you know, I'll share my experience with that. I was in a class, a French class, with this one girl. And I was in this class for 3 semesters. And I had purple hair at the time. And, you know, I go to my first AA meeting, and 3 women come up to me after the meeting, and they're like, is your name Kiki? Like, we heard about you. And I'm like, what? Like, no one knew who I was. I've never been to a meeting before. But this girl who had been in my class for, like, 3 semesters for, like, a year, apparently she knew I was an alcoholic before I did. So not that she was trying to, like, spread rumors about me, but she was like, I think this girl who has purple hair is, like, one of us. Whose name is Kiki. And so here I am showing up at the meeting and I got purple hair. And but I want to say, like, you know, the fact that those women came up to me and they knew who I was and they remembered my name, like, that hit me in a way that I've never felt before. Like, I got in my car and I was driving home and, like, I just broke down and started crying because, like, I've never felt like anyone gave a shit before. Like, nobody... I mean, not in that way, not in that way. Like, and so it was just a really, like, powerful experience. And right there, like, that was my first instance of, like, God. And for me, God shows up in mostly when I look back and I'm like, well, how could that have happened? So when I say I'm an alcoholic, I just like to clarify because in my own, like, analytical brain, like, I had to really understand what it meant to be an alcoholic to do any of the steps. But to be an alcoholic for me is like a all-encapsulating word for, like, what I am. Like, I don't only have a drinking problem. I obviously have a spiritual malady, but I have all these other symptoms that show up because I'm trying to, like, run the show. It's all about me. And I can't let anything else in but me. So ever since I was younger, you know, I was, like, fifth or sixth grade, like, I just felt that icky feeling, like, I wasn't good enough, and I'm sure we all felt that feeling, just, like, you know, something's not right, and it started for me, you know, when I was younger, like, I was, I guess, overweight as a kid, like, not even, just, I was bigger than the normal size kids, I guess, and I got teased for that, but before I did, like, I didn't think there was a problem. Like, I thought I was just a kid having fun and, you know, a really cool experience that I had. My dad sent me a tape that he recorded into a DVD of when I was 4. And so this is 22 years ago. And so it's a DVD, it's a video of me when I'm four and my mom and my dad together in our old house, which was never happening. And it was like I was looking through my parents' eyes. Like when it, you know, when you have to do an eighth and ninth step, like you try to like, you know, see it in a different way, give them the benefit of the doubt. Like I like literally saw it and it was so like just crazy. Because I saw this little girl, like, then I got all emotional. I'm like, this little girl, these bad things happened to you. Why? Like, you know, getting all, like, pity party. But, you know, when I was a kid, like, nothing was wrong. And then people started, you know, noticing that I wasn't okay. And then I started feeling like I wasn't okay. And then it just kind of, like, blew up from there. So I noticed that I wasn't okay. I noticed I was bigger than the other kids. So when I was in fifth grade, I guess I developed an eating disorder. I just stopped eating. I stopped eating because I knew that when I got to sixth grade, there was no way that I was going to start new and kids were not going to make fun of me anymore. Like, I had to make sure that in the future I could, like, take care of myself. Like, you know, make sure nothing bad happened. So, you know, I stopped eating whatever. But in that time, it was a great way to, like, distract my mind from not feeling inadequate. Like, you know, I couldn't just sit there and be okay with myself. I had to do something to change it. I had to focus on something else to get my mind off of how much I hated myself or how much it just wasn't okay inside. And I did. And then I lost a bunch of weight, and things were great. Not really. So I went to middle school, and, you know, I didn't grow up in an abusive family. I didn't grow up, like, in poverty. I had a really good childhood. Like, really, really good. Like, nothing was ever, like, wrong that I thought, but everything was always wrong inside, like, all the time. And I was like, why do I feel like this? Like, there's nothing wrong. Like, why do I feel, I had so much love for my mom and my dad, and I just couldn't feel that. So, you know, sixth grade comes, and I have a very obsessive personality, so I clung to basketball. That was my next, like, thing. So I became obsessed with basketball in the sense that I was going to be the first female NBA player, because I, even back then, had delusional thinking. Like, that's just how it was. And I became obsessed with that, and I did these odd things just to, like, make sure that I was okay. Like, I had this self-protective behavior all my life. So, like, I was the weird kid that came into school carrying her basketball, trying to shove it in her locker because it, you know, wouldn't fit, bringing it to class, going home, sleeping with my basketball, and, like, you know, I'd watch videos of Kobe Bryant on, like, TV, and I'd watch his documentary and everything that he did and how he practiced 8 hours a day and, like, stayed after practice and all these things. You know, I forgot that he was, like, 7 feet tall, but it didn't matter. But, like, I would focus on that, and I would do it. Like, it would just have to get done. Like, that's how my mind worked. Like, I always had to be distracted. I could never just be who I was. Like, I was always thinking all the time. Like, my mind never shut up, ever. So that was what I was focused on. And then going into high school, you know, again, it was like a new change. Got to focus on academics now and became obsessed with that. And, you know, high school was kind of, I guess, where it really took off into, like, now I'm an adult, or now I'm older, and I can do these things. I could do drugs. I could drink. I could leave the house if I wanted to. Like, so I did. But what happened in high school is that, you know, these obsessions that I had with either, like, my weight or with school or with sports or with boyfriends or with people, like, they just, it wasn't good enough. Like, it didn't. My mind was still going. So that's when, you know, the trips to the psych wards started coming and the trips to the eating disorder units and residential and, like, the overdoses started. And, like, I just remember, like, in my sophomore year, like, something was not right. Like, I couldn't, it, wasn't there. Like, I was seeing therapists, I was seeing psychiatrists, and I just knew that something wasn't right. And so I'd try other ways to fix it, like cutting, like food again, attempting suicide, I don't know, other things to make that go away, drugs. But it really didn't start until later on. Like, so I kind of got help, I got treatment, I was okay, I guess. Had some bad things happen in my going to college. But anyways, I thought I was fine. I thought that I was, you know, I hit 20 years old, I was with this guy, I thought I was okay. After going through therapy, I was fine. But all my problems were my parents' fault. Like, you know, I was at the adolescent age where, like, all of your problems are not yours. Like, they're everyone else's. And because I'm an alcoholic, they're everyone else's problems anyways. So, like, so I got married when I was 20, and that never was planned. I'm from Minnesota, actually. My boyfriend at the time decided to join the Air Force. So he was going to join the Air Force and save our lives, and we were going to start over in a new state and leave all the shit behind, all the problems, all the family members, all the chaos and drama. That was all going to be. So we were going to move to Delaware, and we were going to have a nice house with a white picket fence and dogs and our own furniture and, like, our own income. And we did have that for a while. Like, we got two dogs right away. We had a white picket fence. Like, we had our own house. And I was like, oh, see, this is it. This is where it is. Like, I had these expectations, these delusional expectations, not just like, oh, you know, we'll see what happens. It was like, no, this is going to happen now. Never thought that if it didn't happen, what would happen? Well, those things didn't happen. Like, I, you know, after a little bit, you know, I had to meet friends. And what a better way to meet friends than to drink, because everyone drinks. Like, everybody drinks socially. You know, hey, you want to go out for a beer after work? Yeah. Hey, you want to go out to the club? Yeah. Like, you know, everybody does. So that was a really easy way for me to meet people. And also, I found that taking a drink shut those thoughts up real fast. Like, I had drank before, in high school, and I did drugs in high school, and I didn't do them health, like, you can't really do drugs, like, in a healthy way, but, you can't take Adderall before, like, writing a paper, like, just because it helps me out, you know, like, but I found that, like, taking a drink, like, it's like, oh my God, like, where has this been my entire life? Like, it just shut my head up right away, and it not only shut my head up, but it just made everything better, like the perception. Everything was the same everywhere, but I saw it in such a different way. And all of a sudden, I was okay, and my head shut up, and this feeling went away inside, and everybody else was, like, super awesome, and I loved everybody. And so it was just, like, this miraculous thing that I'd found. And so finding this solution, this now it was my higher power, I did it every day. And at first, it was fun to go out with people and go to clubs and, like, party and, you know, blackout and not remember what I did, but hear it the next morning at work, like, oh, Kiki, do you remember when you were out on the dance floor last night all by yourself doing the robot? Like, wasn't that so funny? And, like I didn't remember it, but I was like, yeah, like, that was so awesome. Like, so I would get these, it was almost like I get pride in, like, what I had done when I was drunk, because I was the funny, goofy, happy, like, crazy Kiki when I was drunk, and I'd, like, be popular at work the next morning because I did all these crazy things. But those crazy things started to get even crazier and even more extreme. And my friends were kind of like, you know, this is kind of getting out of hand. Like, when I would black out and I'd fall on my face because I was trying to light a cigarette like this, and I'd fall on my face and wake up the next morning and have, like, I had a huge scar, like, all over my face, and I was a groomer at PetSmart, and I remember I didn't even, like, look at my face the next morning because I had to go right to work at 7 a.m., so I just, like, got, like, 2 hours of sleep, got and went to work, and I remember going to work, and people were like, what happened to your face? And I'm like, I don't know what happened, and, like, I had blood all over my face, and I didn't even know about it, and I'm like, how the hell did that happen? Like, I had no recollection of that happening at all, and that happened so much. Like, that happened all the time. And the sad part is, and I'll talk about this later with making amends in step 8, but was with my husband. So my husband is an angel. I don't know if you believe in that kind of stuff, but he's a really good person. And he married me when we were 20. And even at that time, like, I had cheated on him before we got married. And I can say that now because that's what I did. I cheated on him a lot. And then when I started drinking, it was like an open door. Like, I don't remember it, so I didn't cheat on you. Or what would happen is that, so I didn't really have a lot of friends. I had people that I worked with that liked to party, and then I had my husband, who's in the Air Force, and all of his coworkers and people that he works with in the Air Force who liked to drink. They'd all go out. Well, I'd go out with them, and Carl would go. And we'd all get hammered, and my husband would be, he's a normal person, normal drinker, so we'd have like 2 and be like, okay, I'm good. So we'd all get hammered, and he'd be at the bar, and I'd be with his friends cheating on him, having sex in the back room, like while he's there. And this happened all the time. And it would be with the people that he directly worked with. So he'd have to see them next morning, and me being the kind wife would, you know, Carl, I gotta talk to you. I'm really sorry, but I cheated on you last night. Like, I would tell him right away because I thought it was the right thing to do. Like, how selfish and self-centered is that? But that's what I did because I thought I was doing the right thing. I'm telling him that I cheated on him and I'm a good person. And he had to go to work and he had to face those people. Not only did he feel ashamed and mad at me, but he was probably embarrassed by all his coworkers. And, you know, it didn't stop there. Like, I can't even believe he's still with me. I'm still married. Like, I don't understand that one. But we'd go to, like, his work Christmas parties, and I would be, you know, it'd be open bar for the first hour, so I'd be there, like, an hour and a half early to get in line, and I'd be getting all these drinks just to make sure that, like, you know, I had some when the open bar was closed. So I'd be blackout drunk again. And one year we had, like, this dancing contest. So, like, you know, they would judge us, and if you know, you got tapped if you were out, and I was at the top 2. And apparently I was dancing, like, apparently I like to dance when I'm drunk, like, hardcore, you know, the robot, and, like, just spreading my legs and everything. I was just going crazy. And apparently some people got some pictures of my downstairs, and it was all over the Air Force, like, website. At his work. So Carl came in like a couple of days later, and some guys were like laughing, and they're like, dude, that's your wife. And like, can you imagine what he'd feel like, what he felt like when he saw that? Like, that's my wife. Like, not only did she cheat on me, but now her vagina is like everywhere for everyone to see. Like, I didn't even care. Like, I was just, I thought it was funny. I was like, that's funny. Now I'm popular. It has work now. Like, whatever. I don't even care. Like, I didn't have one regard for anyone but myself at all. I did not care. And again, like, I don't understand how he's still with me. But that's how it was. Like, that's, you know, for the time that I was here, it went from hanging out with people to doing that to drinking alone. Like, we probably all do, drinking by ourselves, getting high by myself. You know, how the end looked for me was my husband worked 3 to 11, and I would have school until about 3. So I'd go to school. On the way home, I'd go to the liquor store, and I'd grab a couple bottles of wine. I drank wine because it was healthy for your heart, apparently. I justified it that way. Like, I was very delusional. Like, I also had an eating disorder, so I was like, well, wine is healthy for your heart. And it's just like, I thought it was fine. But drinking 3 bottles of wine, like, by yourself at night, like, that's not good. And then Franzia is just, like, the backup, like, in the fridge if I, like, run out of my bottles. So he'd go to work, and then I would come home from school, and I'd be all by myself. From 3 to when I'd pass out. And I would drink, and I would make a mess, and I'd pass out. And my husband would come home from work every night and find me in my own pee, because I, like, couldn't hold it in anymore, with stuff all over my face, just a mess. And I'd be knocked out unconscious because I'd passed out. And he'd put me on his shoulder, and walk me upstairs and tuck me into bed and clean up after me. And, like, he did that every night for a very long time. And, like, I just don't understand. I don't understand why he's still with me. So, you know, I don't know what happened, but one day, like, I just was, I don't know if it was me or him, but it was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I didn't hit a bottom where I was in jail, or I had hurt anyone severely, well, physically hurt anyone severely. I hit a bottom just inside. Like, I just couldn't take it anymore. It was like an internal bottom, if that makes any sense to anybody. Like, I didn't have, like, 10 DUIs. I wasn't in jail. Like, I just hit this bottom inside where it was like, I can't do it anymore. Like, I can't do this. And I had tried everything, you know, all the techniques that they suggested or that we try or we had tried. Like, why don't you just drink wine? Why don't you just drink beer? Why don't you drink on the weekends only? Why don't you drink, like, not in the morning? I don't know, just, like, certain limitations to drinking. And I had tried all that, and, like, you know, like I said before, like, when I set my mind to something, like, it gets done. And anyone that's in the way gets shoved out of the way. Like, you're in my way, man. So I tried this, and I was so pissed that I couldn't do it, like, over and over and over again. Like, I couldn't stop it. And I'd wake up the next morning, and I'd be like, I'm never doing this again, ever. Like, I'd wake up, and I was just like, oh, I'm never doing this again, ever. And I'd go to work, and I'd go to school, and by about noon, I was like, yeah, maybe, you know, kind of sounds good. Maybe I should, like, go to the liquor store. I don't know. Maybe I'll go to the grocery store and get some cheese so that I'll have cheese and wine. It'll be, like, some kind of fancy thing by myself, like, you know, trying to, like, justify, like, oh, that's fine. And by 3 o'clock, I was like, no, we're going. Like, there's no stopping. Like, it's happening. And then I'd, you know, take those first sips, and, like, it was just, like, the best. Like, it was almost like I was getting high opening the bottle, because it was just, like, such this rush, just, like, oh, my God, I'm going to feel so much better in, like, 5 seconds. And then I would just chug it, and it would be, oh, it would be great, what I thought. And then after a while, it would just, you know, it'd be done. So something happened where I went to my first meeting. I went to a meeting in Newark, Delaware, and the very first meeting I went to was a Monday, and it was a 7 o'clock meeting, and I drove to this church and parked my car, and all of my thoughts about AA and stereotypes, like, it's all older men drinking out of paper bags, smoking cigarettes, apparently they all came true, because I parked my car in that parking lot, and I looked at the church, and I'm like, the fuck, like, there's all these old men smoking cigarettes outside of this church, like, I'm not going in there. Like, there's no way. So there was a 7:30 meeting, and I was like, I'm going to try one more, and if it's the same thing, I'm going home. Like, I'm done. So I went to Westminster House, which is in Newark, Delaware, and I parked my car, and there were younger people, men and women, outside smoking. And I was like, oh, fine, I'll just, like, go inside. I'll wait till 7:29 and then go inside and sit down. And I did. I went inside, and I just felt like I was eating, like, myself. Like, that new scared to death feeling. Like, I just, oh, my God, I can't do, like, what am I doing? This, like, so scared where I couldn't even hear anything. Like, I was just sitting there, like, you know. And then I look up, and who's, like, chairing the meeting? This kid looks like he's 12 years old, and he's chairing the meeting. And I'm like, what is this? Like, he's wearing headphones, and it's Rob, by the way. Like, he's wearing headphones, and I'm like, why is he, there's a 12-year-old little boy at the front of the meeting, and then there's all these younger women, and I'm like, okay, like, either this is a really good place, or this is, like, really weird, like, I don't know where I am. And so I didn't hear anything throughout the meeting. I was just, like, scared to death. And then, like I said, after the meeting, women came up to me, and they gave me their phone number, and they're like, you're Kiki, because you have purple hair. And they gave me their number, but they gave me the big book. They gave me this book right here. And, you know, the next day I went to class, and I saw that girl that knew I was an alcoholic, and I was like, yeah, so I met your friends, you know, their names. And she's like, oh, yeah? How'd you meet them? I'm like, I went to a meeting last night. She's like, oh, really? Like, I knew she wanted to say, like, told you, I knew it. But, like, she did, like, she was very, oh, that's interesting, you know. Oh, do you want to go get coffee after? Like, sure. Just, like, very, you know, very awesome. Just an awesome person. So we got coffee after, and I told her my life story. And I was like, you know, I'm going to have to get a divorce, and all these bad things are going to happen. And she just sat there, like, we were at Salad Works, and she just sat there, and she was like, okay. Like, she just let me talk. She didn't give me any advice. She didn't tell me that I had to stop drinking and I had to do all these things. She just listened. And she's like, you know, why don't we just wait? Why don't you just see if you go through the steps, like, what happens? And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. So I did, though. She gave me some instructions. She told me to read the doctor's opinion, and I did. I read it, like, four times because I didn't understand what they were talking about. I'm like, why is this? I mean, is this how the whole book's going to be? Like, this, I didn't understand what they were talking about. My brain was not going there. So she had to explain it to me. And it made sense, but then the part where, I don't know if it's in the doctor's opinion or a little bit farther on where it's like, because I wasn't sure I was an alcoholic. I didn't start going to meetings and saying, hi, my name's Kiki, I'm an alcoholic. I would say, hi, my name's Kiki. Like, that was it. Because I knew I had a problem drinking because I had a problem with food. I was depressed. I was diagnosed bipolar and manic depressive. And I had a personality disorder, and I knew I had a problem because I had problems all my life. Like, I accepted that. I almost like loved that I had a problem because I had this like answer. I had this attention because I had a problem. So I went in and I didn't think I had a problem. So I read through the steps. I did all the reading she told me to do. I read the doctor's opinion. There is a solution. There is a solution, I think. And more about alcoholism. And I think we did steps one and two, and we did steps three. And, you know, I knelt on the floor with her, and I said the third step prayer with all intentions. I meant it. Like, I really wanted to do this. I was doing what she told me to do. And I went home the next day, and I drank. And I continued to drink for a while. I continued to drink saying the third step prayer. Like, I'd be on my knees saying the third step prayer drunk because I couldn't stop. Like, I literally could not stop drinking. I couldn't stop for not even a day. So she's like, you know what, Kiki, maybe you're one of the types that needs to be physically separated from alcohol for a period of time. So I was. So I went to detox for a while. And while I was in detox, like, sure as shit, I read the whole big book. And I mean, what else was I going to do? Like, there was nothing to do. It was either, like, read this or sit. Like, sit. So I read this. And, but like I said in the beginning, like, I had a really big problem with God. Like, so the third step is to turn your will in your life over to a power greater than yourself. Like, I took that literally, like, turn my will and my life over to a power. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around that. I couldn't do it. Because I kept thinking about the God that I was raised with. Like, you know, I was growing up Catholic and baptized and confirmed. And, like, that God was just like, nah, there's no way I'm turning my life over to that. So I read the book. And I read We Agnostics. And then it said something about, like, the spirit of the universe or creative intelligence, and my giant ego was like, creative intelligence, I can get that, like, that makes sense. So I did, and somehow it clicked, and I got out of detox, and I did a fourth step, and then I did a sixth and seventh step, and, like, it just started happening. Like, I don't know what happened, but somewhere in that detox, something clicked, something changed over, and my perception changed. So I got out, did a fourth and fifth, sixth and seventh, and then, you know, met my sponsor up, did an eighth step, went to meet her up, and she's like, oh, so remember your fourth step? That's your eighth step. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And did you forget anybody? Maybe. Did you steal? Really? Like, that has to go on there too? Like, oh, my God. So, like, I didn't think that was a problem. Like, I was a kleptomaniac for a couple years. Like, that was, I had a lot of stuff on my stealing list. So, right away, she's like, okay, well, I'm going to give you a week, and in that week, you need to pick three people, and you need to make amends. I was like, okay. But in that experience, so making amends, I'll just talk about one experience with that. That's one of the most powerful things, I think, that impacted me in my early recovery was the amends. because it was just like letting my guard down and just dropping the ego and just like, here's how I hurt you. Please tell me how I hurt you and what can I do to make it up? Like just completely letting my guard down. And one of the most profound experiences that I had with this is with my husband's dad and stepmom. And this is such a powerful program. Like when I came into the rooms, I hated them because he was physically, verbally, mentally, whatever, abused when he was growing up. And I hated his stepmom and dad to the point where I would say shit about them all the time. Like, if I ever got a chance, I'd kill them. Like, I hate them. I'm never going over there. I'm never doing that. And I thought I was doing him a favor by saying these things. Like, I will protect you. I will hate them, and I will go over there, and I will hurt them for you. But it wasn't for him. Like, I hated them because I hated them. Carl, my husband, wanted to have a new relationship with them. Like, once we moved out here, he wanted to have, like, he didn't have, his mom died. He didn't have any other family. Like, he wanted to start over and forgive them. And I was like, there's no way. I hate them. There's no, I'm not doing that. And they sure as shit were on my resentment list, so had to make amends to them. So I went back with my husband for a funeral of my husband's dad's, I guess my stepfather's mother. And I was like, okay, I'm going to make amends. And I was worried before I went. I talked to my sponsor, and I was like, what if I go back and I relapse? Like, what if the situation's like too strong and I relapse? And she's like, Kiki, like, people don't relapse because of situations. They relapse because they're not spiritually fit. And that, like, struck me, like, real hardcore. Like, what do you mean? Like, oh, my God. Like, okay, so if something really bad happens to me, I'm not, like, doomed? She's like, no, because as long as you're working this program, like, you have a higher power. And that just, like, blew me away. So I went back there, and I made amends to them. And it was just really weird because I was just like, you know what? I said I was sorry. I didn't really say I was sorry, but I did. I approached them in a way that showed them that, like, you know, I was now there for them. Like, I would now be a part of their life. And that is all my husband wanted with this relationship, was that I would be there with him, to be a part of his family now, which I never would have done. So now, like, as an amends, like, I text them and I call them. And when I go home, like, I hang out with, I go to dinner with them. I don't want to, but I do because that's what I do. That's part of the amends. And it's meant way more to my husband than it has to me. Like, I never thought it affected him, but it really did. So that was really powerful. And then doing a 10th, so now I'll talk about 10 and 11 and 12. It's funny because I opened up the big book and I was like, I wonder if I should talk about something in here. And I talked about, and I opened up to We Agnostics, and the first thing I saw was we had to find a power which we could live by, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, which is the whole program. And that's what I struggled with the most. And like I said earlier, like, I have to do 10, 11, and 12 every day. Otherwise, I get blocked off. Otherwise, I run on my own self-will, and my own crazy mind takes over. And I don't give a crap about any of you guys. So, you know, this whole finding a power greater than myself thing, like, I just have to share this because it was kind of a new thing that I guess, not really thought of, but took in. So, like, even if there isn't, like, a higher power, I mean, there is. But before, it was all me. Like, it was all me. There was nothing else. I didn't have friends. I didn't have support. I didn't have a God. I didn't have anything. It was me, and I did it. I did it all, and I was going to do it. And that didn't get me very far. Like, that got me failing every time. And now, like, I have all of this power from everyone in this room and all of my close friends. And, like, even if there wasn't a higher power, which I know there is for me, like, all of this combined power is way more than just me. And so I found a greater power than myself. And then I have this God to tack onto that. Like, there's no way that my fucking alcoholism is going to come back. Because I have all, as long as I utilize this stuff, like, it works. And that just, I don't know, someone said that to me, and it's just like, oh my God, like, power. That makes sense. So, you know, doing a 10th step. You know, I call myself out every day when I do, when I'm resentful and I'm scared, selfish, and dishonest. And that's really important to me. And I know a lot of people struggle with 10 steps. And personally, like for me, when I don't do them, stuff builds up in me and I don't realize that it's building up, because it's like when I'm in these situations, like I'm in them. Like I can't see that I'm full of fear. Like I can't see it. I'm just in this situation. And then all of a sudden, I want to kill myself. Like this happened this last winter. I stopped doing 10 steps. Like I was living in this fear all the time, this fear and this selfishness all the time. And like all of a sudden, one morning I woke up and I was at a coffee shop and I was studying for an exam. And I literally was like, I want to kill myself right now. Either I'm going to jump in front of a car, I'm going to rob a store, I'm going to like do something eccentric because I have to like just get out of my skin for a second. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Like I was sober and I was doing the steps. And I called somebody finally and they had me do a meditation. And then I had to go through this whole process of like reestablishing a relationship with God, because again, I had closed a higher power out because I still had those thoughts. They were twinkling in the back of my mind of how I grew up with God and how it's a he, and that it's a punishing God and that he has these expectations for you. And to me, like that was, I couldn't do it. So my sponsor sat me down in this chair. She calls like a crying chair, because like when people sit there, they cry at her house all the time. It's like, but it, you know, I guess where that's where step work gets done. So she sat me down in her chair and she's like, Kiki, why don't you make a list of everything that you hate about God and then everything that you want your God to be? So two separate lists. So I did. And like, but it was really weird because I was like, I didn't think I could do that. Like, I don't think I could make my own list of God. But I did. And I started to say, like, my God was the happy feeling that I felt when I was laughing. Like, that joy that you feel, that was what it was. That's what it started out to be. And it kind of just grew from there. And, you know, I also didn't know that when I was mad, I could swear at God or say I hate you or like just yell, because I thought that God would smite me or something. But I did. And like when I was going through a period of time, a really hard period, my husband is deployed now and I had to like get rid of all these things in my life that we used to have, and our two dogs, and we had two dogs that were my children. There was a German Shepherd and a Husky, and they were my kids. And when I drank, they were always there with me, loving me, sitting next to me, like, probably got alcohol spilled on them a couple times, turned red, like, but they were with me all the time. And when I got sober, my husband was going to deploy for, like, 2 years, and I had to move up here. I moved up to Newark to be around people in the fellowship and to go to school, and situations happened where I had to find new homes for my dogs, and, like, that was just, that was way harder for me than getting sober. I honestly was getting rid of my dogs and finding them new homes. And like, I was pissed. That was also part of the reason, I think, where I just wanted to kill myself. Like, I wasn't talking about this. But what I did is that I finally just, like, in my bathroom, yelled at God. Like, I sat there and I was scream crying. Like, I'm sure someone's scream cried before. Like, scream crying at God, because I couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, after that I felt better. Like, I felt those really uncomfortable emotions that I don't like to feel. Like, I don't like to feel emotions ever, never. If I did, then I wouldn't be drinking. Like, so I scream cried at God and I swore, and then I sat in my bed, I laid there looking up at the ceiling, and I just felt the shitty emotions just go right through me. And, like, literally, like, I think I fell asleep crying, and I woke up the next morning, and, like, that feeling was gone. Like, I had not only, like, felt the emotion, I had actually gone through it and came out the other side. Like, and I learned that I could handle emotions, which I never thought that I just never wanted to. Like, I couldn't do it. So I went through that process, and that just, like, that got me closer to something, to some kind of higher power. that I never would have thought could have happened. And then doing step 11, so praying and meditating every day. That's something that I found that I absolutely have to do, because my brain, in my mind, is always just like going like this, like just like I said, like on default, it's just like meh. Like in every situation, it's not even that I want to drink. It was like, analyze everything. What kind of spaghetti sauce should you buy? Let's look at every ingredient and like it's always analyzing and like just thinking, or like, what am I doing? Am I making people mad? Like, it's just always, I don't even know. It just doesn't shut up normally. So I found through trial and error, lots of error, that I have to have a quiet time in the morning to, I guess, meditate. Part of my meditation is reading pages 84 to 88 every day, which is the 10th and 11th part of the big book steps. And sitting quietly. Sometimes I sit in silence. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just talk to God. But I've found that, like, doing that, it's almost like a preventative thing. Like, it shuts my mind up in advance. And if I do that, it works. And that, I had to, like, go through this process of, like, discovering what meditation was. Like, it's not, for me, it wasn't, like, I thought it was, like, sitting on a pillow, like, chanting to Buddha, like, with candles lit. And that's cool. Like, that's awesome. But I had to, like, learn that it doesn't have to be like that. Like, just reading in quiet can be meditation. Like, just talking out loud can be talking to God and listening. Like, it's really powerful. And then lastly, like, step 12, like, I guess this is speaking and helping people. I guess that's helping others. But why I think it's important, like, not just, you know, have to spread the message so we keep the book going. I don't think it's that. Like, for me, it's like, you know, I have to remember that I'm an alcoholic. Like, that's why I keep coming to meetings, so that I remember that, like, I'm not normal. Like, I'm not normal. Sorry to say, Kiki, but, like, you can't just go to a liquor store and pick up one bottle of wine and say, hey, let's have a good night. Like, doesn't happen. Like, I have to remember that I'm not, that my thoughts just aren't, they're not okay by themselves. So I go and I reach my hand out to other people, because I know what it feels like to feel like shit. Like, that's all I can describe. Like, you know, I've had my experience. It's my experience. That's just what happened in my life. And I think I can relate to everybody when I say that, like, we just all had this icky feeling inside that we just wanted to go away, like, so badly. And so when I see someone with that struggles with that, like, I know what it feels like, and all I can do is do what was shown to me, which my sponsor just sat there and she listened and she showed me what she did through the book, and I guess that's what I do. And I share my experience. I think I'm almost done. But again, like, I just wanted to say, like, you know, being an Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just, I can't even describe it into words. Like, I just feel different. Like, I just, like I said, like, I perceive the world differently. And, like, I have friends. And it's not all about the friends. Like, that's a huge part of it. I have a lot of friends and fellowship now. But it says in the book, and I'm going to be, like, quoting the book, a world of my wildest dreams. Like, I really do have that. but it's cool. Like, I don't know. I'm really happy. And if anybody is struggling right now or wants to talk or thinks that they're not an alcoholic, like, just take the word away. Like, if you fit the symptoms of the book, who cares what it's called? I don't know. That's how I related to it. So, I'm done a little early. Thanks for letting me share.